There are few places on earth like a college campus. Different generations, all walks of life, from around the country.
I grew up in LA, but I've always wanted to be a Sooner.
And the world.
I lived in Panama, and now I'm at OU studying creative media production.
Living on campus together, broadening our horizons.
There are ways to think about this that I never thought about before.
Learning, growing, making mistakes.
When it started hailing during our study, I knew that we had miscalculated.
And achieving remarkable things.
I got to help with cancer research, and I'm only an undergrad.
I'm Emily Tackett, and this is Just So, an OU podcast about thought leaders here in the heartland. There's a world of voices on this campus, but there's only one Oklahoma. In honor of Women's Equality Day, we're talking with an awesome OU professor who studies women and gender in pop culture. She brings a really fresh perspective to the table, and my eagerness to interview her was made obvious by this unapologetic fangirling.
This is like my favorite thing to talk about in
really?
The world. Yeah.
She wants to see the female narrative in Hollywood change to better reflect the real and diverse roles women play in society. But she's not just for women. She's for more complex and dynamic roles for everyone.
You're a human being too, and you just happen to be a woman, or you just happen to be a woman of color, or you just happen to be LGBTQ, right?
There
seems to be a focus on all these other aspects of their identity. And I think if we just shifted our focus and started to write on just characters and human narratives, that would change the way that people in general are presented in film. And I think that there's a market, there's a hunger right now with people going to see Wonder Woman, going to see Get Out, going to see Hidden Figures. There are so many of us who are saying, this is what we want, this is what we like. We want these human narratives.
She looks at pop culture with a critical but optimistic eye, challenging herself and her students to engage with media and ask for more when it comes to the representation of women and the diversity of the human narrative in general. We're talking about that and more today on Just So.
Well, first of all, Lisa, thank you so much for being here today.
Yay!
To start off, could you introduce yourself and say what you do here at the university?
So my name is Dr. Lisa Funnell. I am an assistant professor in women's and gender studies. I'm also the co-director for the Center for Social Justice. And my area of specialization is gender in film. So I teach courses looking at women and gender in popular culture, a lot of them in action films. So I teach a course on female heroism in Hollywood. I teach a course on gender in James Bond, so take them, as well as teaching social justice and social change, which is our core course for the social justice minor.
That's awesome. So you specialize in gender and identity and movies and so much more. Can you tell us kind of what your research focuses on and maybe your favorite areas of that research?
Yeah, so my research focuses on the action genre, which tends to be a male-dominated and oriented space. So most action films are made by men, so they're written, directed, and produced by men. They star men, and they tell us tales of sort of masculine endeavors. And they're produced for a predominantly an assumed male audience. So for me, I'm interested in looking at how men are represented, but also how women are presented as heroes in this space. How do we carve out space for women? So I've looked at Chinese warrior women. I wrote a book on that. I also do a lot of research looking at gender in James Bond, looking at the men, looking at the women, and I'm shifting now into looking at geopolitics and spy thrillers.
Can you tell me a little bit about your research on all the Bond films?
I love James Bond. I want to be James Bond. I mean, he's the most privileged figure that we have out there. I'd like to be able to go on adventures and cross borders and not have to worry about my safety and security. I would like to be valued for my ideas and achievements rather than be limited, say, by my gender or broader perceptions of what I can do. But we also have to critique this series. And for me, I think by publishing on it and by talking about it on social media, we should be asking, do we expect more from this series? You know, should James Bond, 50 years in the mid-2010s, I guess that's where we are, what, we're 2017, almost 2018, probably by the time we get another Bond film, maybe 2019, 2020, do we expect more from Bond? Does he need to put down women to establish his heroic legacy? Or can he do it without doing that? Do we have to have women be the collateral damage for Bond's heroism? And I'll give you an example. Something I've been thinking of has to do with Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman came out. I loved Wonder Woman. But one thing that the film does is that it presents us with this superhero. And she has a really strong counterpart played by Chris Pine. His name is Trevor something?
Yeah.
Something like that. But his character, it's well-rounded. He's endearing. He plays a huge role in helping her to have success. And so just because she's a hero, it didn't mean that she couldn't have a full, well-rounded person of a different gender operating in the same space. It didn't take anything away from her. In fact, it actually enhanced the movie and how much I enjoyed it. So I think Wonder Woman serves as a good example that characters of other genders, and I can expand that to other races, ethnicities, abilities, a range of different sexual orientations, they don't have to be two-dimensional. They can be full-fledged characters. They can occupy a really significant space and contribute to the film. And so I think Wonder Woman just sort of serves as a good example that it doesn't have to be the way that it always has been, and that we can hold our series and our franchises accountable when they don't meet those standards.
What do you think contributed to the trend of just having a two-dimensional female character?
I think that sex sells. And I think having a beautiful woman on screen is an attractive thing. Laura Mulvey, many years ago, when she sort of established feminist film theory, came up with the theory of the gaze. And it's not a perfect theory, but her theory is basically this, that we have a male character who looks at a female character. So that's one level of the gaze. And he serves as a screen surrogate for the audience, which are presumed to be men sharing that gaze. So he is the active looker, looker. Yeah, I think that's a word. and she is sort of the passive object that is gazed upon. And it creates this dynamic that continues to be reproduced over and over and over again. And I think it's also a question of who gets to be a subject, who gets to be an object, but even more importantly, when we talk about subjects, who gets to be presented just as humans, right? And do we present anyone other than, say, the white male as being human? Because oftentimes white men are presented as not being raced, but being part of the human race.
What are the consequences when popular series like Bond or Marvel give limited roles to women?
You're talking about mass culture here that is going to then influence the way that people see themselves. And I think that we don't do ourselves any good when we say it's just entertainment. It's only entertainment, because whose lines do we mimic? The characters that we see. Who do we dress up like at Halloween? The characters that we see. How many times have you watched your favorite movie? Time and time and time again, we're internalizing these messages. And sometimes we don't know that we're doing it. And I don't think at any point we're taught to critique these messages. We don't have any filter, and we're inundated with media all day long, but we're never taught to give ourselves barriers and buffers. And so I feel as though when students come in my class, I'm like, okay, now we're going to start thinking critically so you can protect yourself. So you can see what the messages are. You can let in the ones that you want, but you can also sort of push away the ones that you don't. And you can ask for things to be different, right? You can speak up about it. You cannot go, if you don't like what a filmmaker is doing or what a film project is doing, you don't have to go see it, right? Use your money and your voice as being a way to make changes in this industry. And hopefully I teach students who then go on to be in the creative industry. You know, I have the privilege to teach students all across the different fields of study. So if you're going into PR, if you're going to communications, if you're going into advertising, take my classes so that when you go out and you have the chance to create content, or you're sitting in those board meetings trying to make decisions about what content should we include, you might be able to make a difference by saying, maybe we shouldn't do that. I don't know how much control and power you'll have if it's collaboration and if you're just starting out, but as you start moving up that rung of power, that's where you can start making the difference and making different choices that, you know, won't impact people, knowing the influence that it can have.
Do you use the Bechdel test at all when you're evaluating films in your research?
And maybe could you explain the Bechdel test?
Yeah, so this is basically a test looking at female representation. So are there two women in a film? Do the two women have names? That matters. And do the two women talk to each other about something other than a man? So the test is designed to look at how female characters often orient themselves and their actions around men. And you'd be surprised how many films fail this very simple test. I think the Bechdel test is a very low bar. It's a very, very low bar. So I don't usually challenge my students to look at it, because I think we should be pushing for more than just like named women talking about something other than a man. But it does draw attention to the fact that most often that doesn't happen. And the question is, why? Why do so many of our films center on the lives and accomplishments of men? And I'm not saying they're bad films. I love these films too. I watch these films too. Couldn't we get a little bit more? Shouldn't we be asking for a little bit more? So it really does draw attention to the nature of gender politics and dynamics. But I think we should be pushing for a heck of a lot more than just like, do you have names? And are you talking to you? Like, how's the weather? We just like did the Bechdel test right there. We just passed, right?
Yes.
So I think we should push and strive for a little bit more.
What do you think about movies originally cast with male protagonists being remade with female protagonists? Like Doctor Who is going to be a woman and Ghostbusters being remade. What do you think about those kinds of things?
I think that there's been a lot of backlash, and this is part of this broader backlash about casting women in these roles. But I think we need to look at what is driving this backlash. I think that it is a privilege to be able to see yourself in the media. Oftentimes when privilege is sort of expanded to other people, when it's no longer exclusively your privilege, you kind of feel bad about it. And maybe that's the first sort of feeling that you're having. And oftentimes that feeling of your privilege being spread around so that all of us have privilege, I think oftentimes is mistaken as being disadvantaged, as being marginalized, as being attacked. And I think that there's a difference between having, say, a woman cast in a male role and symbolic annihilation, which is basically a term for not having representation in film in general. Or a racial stereotyping or gender stereotyping, which is this limited, fixated term of form of representation that can have some really devastating consequences. And stereotypes, we can't flush them out of our system because they're easy, right? They're easy, they're quick. We look at someone, we know who they are. These are very dangerous things, right? There's a difference between being represented in that way and having to live with that for your entire life, seeing it on screen, and this moment where a character that you like and that you grew up with is now cast as a woman. These are very different experiences. So I think that what we're seeing are people sort of saying, wait a second, these are my icons, without saying, but you know what? What must it have been like to be a woman and to grow up watching 12 doctors and just being expected to connect with these doctors because they are the heroes?
We've had some awesome young women in movies and TV this year.
Yeah.
Lara from Wolverine, Eleven from Stranger Things, Nova in War for the Planet of the Apes. Why do you think we're getting these strong, awesome young female characters, and yet they're written to be completely silent?
I probably would need like a couple years to see like what else is going on in society and culture, but I think you raise a really good point about them not speaking. How do we know what a character thinks and feels in a film, in a visual media, unless they say, this is what I'm thinking and feeling? We don't know. And I think that that silence limits their ability to be presented as fully developed characters. Unless you have like a really amazing voiceover narrative that is telling us what a character is thinking, you can only go by their actions. And I think that that's a little bit troubling for me to see that this is now the trope of the silent but deadly girl and somebody that we're cheering for, but someone who we're also supposed to be afraid of. And so is this just an iteration of women should be seen and not heard, which is a very troubling gender role, but it has a different manifestation in it. And of course, these women that we're seeing are dangerous. So what is that telling us? Sorry, these girls that we're seeing are dangerous. What is that telling us? I think there's something here that we need to really interrogate and sort of question.
With Wonder Woman being the summer's biggest hit, do you think it's promising that studios are going to produce more movies like this in the future?
I am cautiously optimistic. My caution comes from what I would say is the Kathryn Bigelow effect that didn't happen. So after Kathryn Bigelow won the Best Oscar for Direction Award, there was this belief that we would then get more female filmmakers, that she had opened the floodgates, there would be opportunities for women to direct films. Because look, this woman has reached the pinnacle. And the opposite happened. The number of female filmmakers actually went down. We haven't progressed beyond, I would say, 10 to 20% in any sort of like creative position. And 20% is a really high, it's more like 10%. We're talking here about directors, cinematographers, editors, producers, composers. Women still make a minority and a very small minority of creative personnel. So even though there was this big, you know, celebration of one female filmmaker, it didn't necessarily have a ripple effect for other female filmmakers. So when it comes to Wonder Woman, because it's not behind the scenes, because it's in front of the screen, because we as audiences, that is our contact point, I'm more optimistic that it might open the floodgates.
And how do you think we reconcile when we see these characters that we love and that are really cool, and then there's always something that maybe is just a little bit off? Is it just because representation of women and underrepresented populations is so low that we put, is it again putting all of our stock in these characters? And how do we look past that or question it and still enjoy the movies that we love?
I think that pleasure, when you're talking about the media that we watch, is a really complicated thing. We like things that are problematic, and we have to be able to find space to allow, on the one hand, ourselves to enjoy these things. Because let me tell you, I can critique anything, but I can still enjoy watching it. And I think that we have to first allow ourselves that space to like things, but also to see the ways in which they are troubling. I can be a feminist and still love James Bond. Sounds complicated, but it happens, right? And so I think allowing ourselves license to do it then gives us freedom to critique instead of feeling bad for what we like.
I think that's an awesome distinction. To be able to appreciate a film for the things it does right, to enjoy it while still giving yourself license to critique it. But when we do see problematic things in film, what can we do to promote change?
If you want to go see these films, and if you want to support these films and you want your voice to matter, go see them on opening weekend. Go see them Friday and Saturday. Support them. I mean, if someone was to say, hey, you want to go see Wonder Woman again? I'd be like, yes. Like, I will go and support this film because I know that, yes, my little $10 might not mean something, but if all of us are putting in $10, it's sending a message that this is a huge film that Hollywood now has to pay attention to.
Right.
So I think that that's important to just even pick and choose your moments, you know, when you go and see the films.
Vote with your dollar.
Vote with your dollar. And I hope that Hollywood just listens to us and listens to our ticket sales and what we're promoting.
Even with big wins like Rey and Star Wars, yeah, and Wonder Woman, they are women and they are the protagonist, but they aren't surrounded by other women in diverse roles around them. And it's like whenever you see us get the one role, we're still lacking in those diverse secondary roles that do view women as, yeah, humans and not as just like tokens to get people in the box office.
I don't argue for diversity necessarily. I argue for parity. I think that our media should reflect the culture and society with which it's representing. So if 50%, well, 51% of the population in the US is made up of women, then shouldn't 51% of the characters that we see be made up of women? And shouldn't 51% of the people creating this media be women? I think that our media should reflect it. And the same thing when it comes to, you know, race and sexual orientation and ability. I think that we should have, you know, parity in our media. So when we have a heroic collective, shouldn't it be half made up of women? Like, 50-50, right? But you never see that. You get the tokenism. And tokenism is just one sort of superficial way to say, hey, look, we have our token woman, or we have our token Black man in this collective.
In 2015, of the 4,370 named speaking characters from the top grossing films, 31.4% were women, a figure that hadn't changed since 2007. In 2016, that stat finally budged to 32%. Incremental progress is still progress, right? We're far from parity, but we had a lot of compelling, dynamic, and three-dimensional women on screen this year. Not just heroes, but also villains and great characters that explored the female narrative in new and interesting ways. Which not only shows acceptance for the diverse roles that women play in society, but also makes for better movies. And after talking so much about what makes good movies work, I couldn't let Dr. Funnel leave the studio without asking for her favorites.
I'm curious what maybe your top three movies are.
After the initial shock, she eventually said John Wick.
Nothing gets my blood pumping like good action choreography, to be honest with you.
Wonder Woman.
And when she climbs into no man's land, I was like, this is like, I was literally like sitting up in my seat climbing with her.
And Hero. This one sounds amazing.
I think a student called it like a smorgasbord or a buffet for your eyes, where it's a person basically telling a story and then I think it's the emperor telling the story back. And so they're giving different versions, and every version is coded in color and saturated color. So there's the red storyline, which is about passion, chaos, and disorder. And everybody's wearing red and the scenery is all red. It's just like this infusion of red. And then there's one about sorrow and it's all cast in blue. And there's another one that's all cast in green. And it is just a visually stunning martial arts film that fills your eyes.
So that's it here. Thanks to Dr. Lisa Funnell for sharing her expertise, Drew Bernard, and Angela Starts. We'll have more episodes soon, but in the meantime, leave us a review. You know how you would never stay in an Airbnb with no reviews? That's what we're at right now. We're brand new in iTunes, and we're that sketchy Airbnb on the block with no reviews, and only you can save us from that purgatory. Subscribe to get new episodes as soon as they release, and thanks for listening.